Let's Talk PR and More.
Public relations, media, publicity, integrated communications, marketing, digital, reputation management, and more.
Let's Talk PR and More with award-winning PR strategist Sherry Goldman.
I'm Sherry Goldman, president of Goldman Communications Group, and welcome to Let's Talk PR and More. My guest today is Tony Sclafani. Tony is a top public affairs strategist and managing director of Mercury's New York office, where he advises corporate clients on strategic communications, media relations, crisis communications, and brand building. Tony started his career as a police reporter for the New York Daily News before bringing his expertise to PR, first as press secretary for the New York City Fire Department, and then as associate commissioner and communications and public affairs for New York City's Department of Buildings. He also served as senior vice president and chief communications officer at the Javits Center, creating its first corporate social responsibility program and leading the communications as the Javits Center transformed into an emergency hospital and vaccination center during the COVID-19 pandemic. So I'm so excited Tony's here today to tell us all about his experiences and public affairs, public relations. So welcome, Tony. It's great to have you.
Hi, Sherry. How are you? Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Great. Let's get started. You have one of the most interesting and broad backgrounds, I think, and one that I personally think is so important because you started out as a journalist. So it's a great perspective to bring to PR. So can you, I know I did it in like 10 seconds in your intro, tell us a little bit about your background and then how you made the leap into public relations.
Sure, no, I'd be happy to. At my core, I consider myself really a storyteller. I feel like storytelling is in my DNA, and I've been doing that for 20-plus years throughout my career, first as a journalist, as you said, and then as a communications professional. I think the roles are very similar. I think you do similar work. I think you do it in different ways. As a reporter, for the Daily News, I cover the New York City Police Department. I was based in the Shack, which is what they call sort of a hub of offices dedicated to reporters, the major outlets in the city, at One Police Plaza. I also covered the fire department. And this, you know, that means I covered everything from public policy to breaking news to homicides throughout the city, building collapses and fires and explosions. And so you really get to know the city when you are a reporter working for one of the major dailies. And I did. And then I wanted something a little different. And I decided that I wanted a new challenge. I wanted some, growth potential in my career. And so I ended up joining the fire department. I had gotten to know them very well, and they did have an opening, and things just lined up and worked out, and I joined the fire department. And it was so interesting because really 1 week I was behind the yellow line covering breaking news, and then the next week I was on the other side setting up the microphones for the fire commissioner for whatever incident it was. So it really was an interesting transition. And to this day, the skills that I learned as a reporter really, really have made me a much, much better communications professional. As you said, after the fire department, I joined the buildings department, and that was due to a rash of construction accidents, bringing a lot of scrutiny to the department at that time. I was brought in to sort of help tell their story make sure everyone was getting the right information at the right time. I spent 5 years at the buildings department, really got to know the ins and outs of the agency, really touched on every aspect of the organization. We redesigned new uniforms, new annual reports. We created an employee awards ceremony. And we also really emphasized the importance of the department, their inspectors, their plan examiners, their engineers, the admin staff, all really working to make New York City a safer place to live, work, and build, I guess.
Now, that makes sense. And you say you identified stories. I think those are probably stories there that were overlooked, to take someone to understand what a story is to be able to tell it And that's so important.
Yeah, no, absolutely. One story that always sticks out in my head is I was really the point person for buildings during Superstorm Sandy in 2012. And so, if you remember, one of the major stories coming out of Sandy right in the beginning was the crane on 57th Street kind of flopping in the wind. There was some, great video.
Do you remember that? Yep.
And so I was there on 57th Street, as they closed the street down, and emergency officials were on scene trying to figure out what to do and how to secure the crane. And certainly our engineers were there. As a result of all of that, I was able to get our engineers into the New York Times on TV discussing what they did. Eventually, the two engineers were featured in Vanity Fair as a result.
Wow.
And that was and I remember the photo shoot like it was yesterday. It was right before Thanksgiving. It was at the top of One Center Street. And I remember Vanity Fair flying in a very famous photographer from Germany to do the shoot. So, the two engineers certainly deserved a lot of credit, and they deserved that attention. I was so happy to help them get it. But yes, what I always saw as one of my goals is to really elevate the profile of the department and its people. Some of the smartest minds in the industry work at the buildings department. They just... it's not as widely as known, and they're used to keeping their head down and not talking to press. And so I certainly, brought the press to them to some degree. So, and then after buildings, it was time to move on, and I joined the Javits Center, in 2013, and the Javits Center was at that time was, finishing up a renovation where they were installing the largest green roof in New York State and one of the largest in the country.
Wow.
And we were discussing the ideas of an expansion down the road, and certainly working closely with New York City officials, working closely with New York State officials at that time. And eventually there was an expansion of the Javits Center in 2016 is when Governor Cuomo announced the project, and certainly I led the communications and the marketing related to that project, throughout the process. The project ended up being completed in 2021. As a result, they added more than 1 million square feet of space to the convention center, which is a pretty big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Javits, I was at Javits for almost 10 years, probably a long time these days. And then I wanted another challenge and something different. And I was lucky enough to join Mercury. Mercury Public Affairs is a nationwide firm. We have more than 10 offices around the country. New York City is our largest office. And we're a public affairs agency. We specialize in public relations, crisis communications, strategic communications, but we also do a lot of government relations, and we do have a robust lobbying division at the local, state, and federal levels. And so far, it's been a little bit more than 6 months, and so far it's been great.
How different is it from your perspective? I mean, because like I said, you have some of the broadest experience. Being on the agency side versus the corporate side or municipal side of the puzzle?
I mean, certainly it's a little different in the sense that, you're focused on generating business, developing business, and meeting with potential clients, and then servicing them to the best of your ability, But whereas when you're in government necessarily, it's the business kind of comes to you, so it's a little different. But at its core, the mission is very much the same, which is identifying potential stories, developing them, cultivating them, helping the subjects that would be speaking, helping them refine their talking points, preparing them for interviews with the media, and then setting up those interviews and setting up photographs and videos. So the job is very similar. It's just, you're sort of on a different side of the coin.
No, that totally makes sense. And you talk about identifying stories. So how do you identify a good story? Does having been a reporter help you? We could go back to some of the times you did at Buildings or certainly at Javits. How do you identify a good story from your perspective? What makes a good story? How do you put it together?
That's a great question.
Because I do think, and I'm going to interrupt for 1 second, I think that PR people sometimes fail because we don't know what a good story is. So the client says, just pitch us. And if you don't know what a good story is, the media is not going to take, I'm just going to write some puff piece on a company. It's really understanding what makes sense.
A story is good when there has to be some drama, good drama or bad drama. Right? There has to be some movement. There has to be an arc of sorts, right? You have to start in one place and end in another. If everything is status quo, nothing really changes and nothing's really new or different or unusual, well, it's pretty difficult to get that story placed, right? So the media wants, and as a former reporter, I think I can say this, you know, the media wants something different at all times, something unusual, something that grabs their readers' attention. And at the heart, they're looking for drama. They're looking for heroes. They're looking for villains, whatever shape or form that takes. And so you have to create some of that drama. And I'll give you a great example. The Javits Center for many years was known as the number one bird killer in New York City.
Really?
Because of its dark mirrored reflective glass that was part of the original design back in the early 80s.
Wow.
And thousands of birds would collide with the glass, over the years. And Javits Center staff, as well as, you know, environmentalists and community members, would see the bodies of birds lying around the building. So it was very horrific. Because of that reputation, people in the community would call the Javits Center Darth Vader. because the dark mirrored glass would, you know, kind of look like Darth Vader's helmet, right? The shape of the building. So, you know, being known as the most hated villain in cinematic history is not a great tagline. It's not a great slogan. So when they were coming to the end of their renovation between 2009 and 2014, they replaced all of the dark mirrored glass with bird-friendly glass. And this glass was much more translucent. It had a dotted pattern on the glass. And therefore, the birds then could see that there was a structure in front of them due to the dots and due to the, you know, transparency of the glass. And therefore, they did not fly into the glass anymore. So bird collisions went down almost immediately. And to this day, bird collisions are down more than 90% compared to before that new glass was installed. And an architect named Bruce Fowle, who was the co-founder of an architectural firm in New York City, he was the one who decided to install that glass. He deserves a lot of credit, of course, for that.
That firm. Was that your story?
You know,
did that have to be your story?
That whole story that I described to you, I was part of, you know, getting that story out there. And we were probably in every publication in the country, every major one based out of New York City. So everything from the New York Times to the Wall Street Journal, we were on national TV repeatedly as a result of this. Because we were really, the Javits Center was proof positive of the importance of bird-friendly glass and its impact on the environment. And so certainly we created a partnership with New York City Audubon as a result, who began to study the impact of the green roof as well as the bird-friendly glass. So that story, so the point of all of this, sorry to keep going.
No, it's fascinating. Keep going.
The point of all of this is that it would not have been such a great story if we did not start out being Darth Vader.
Oh.
So it's a much better story that we started out as the bad guy, in essence. And then as we transformed into the good guy, it was a much better story that got the attention of the media in New York City, media around the country, elected officials, everyone from the governor to the mayor was talking about it. So that brings me back to heroes and villains, and, you know, presenting drama is what makes for a very good story.
But it also makes sense to me, but it sounds like it also takes, I don't want to say courage, but it takes a strong or a good PR person to say, that's a story we identify, instead of the average person would just say, we're doing a renovation. Let's talk about how big the building is. Let's talk about how new and glitzy it is. It's really identifying those story gems. And yes, certainly transformation matters. To say, we're going to talk about it. And certainly then framing the message so that we do talk about it in the right way.
Absolutely. Of course. How you visualize the story, how you package it, how you deliver it, plays a critical role in whether you're where in how you're, you know, whether that story gets placed or not. So, I mean, that's very important. But also, let's also, you know, be clear too, relationships, developing relationships with reporters, gaining their trust, you know, is also very, very important. So, you know, networking with media, you know, proving to them that you're a strong storyteller and that you will deliver what you say you will deliver. To some degree, reporters, you know, they do have to risk their time and their effort on pitches. So the more you can establish trust with reporters, the more you can solidify your reputation as a go-to person, the further you can go.
That makes sense. I know you said you also handled the communications as Javits went from Javits Center to probably the largest vaccination center in the country, right?
Yes.
During COVID emergency, I could say I got my initial vaccines at the Javits Center. So,
that's great.
I was one of those people waiting online with the National Guard. They were phenomenal. The whole experience was great. So tell us about that, because that's a whole different kind of communications and messaging. And I think everything you probably thought the Javits Center was, it now wasn't.
Yes. I mean, that was both the emergency hospital at the height of the pandemic in 2020.
I remember that, yeah.
And then the vaccination center that year later. You know, those were very difficult times for our city, for our country. And you know, I was certainly proud to be a part of the team that put that together. And it was a different type of communications, because it wasn't just press releases. It was really developing the story was developing in real time, right in front of you. And you did have to make a lot of judgment calls. And for instance, I'll give you an example. During the vaccination center, if you remember, you had to register online, and people were showing up after they had made appointments. We had many celebrities walking through our doors looking for the vaccine, and certainly some people recognized them and some people didn't. There still was a fear out there of getting too close to anyone, if you remember.
I do.
I did a lot of, you know, customer service training, a lot of communications training, a lot of talking points, a lot of process to help the people that we had on our team deal with those scenarios and how to respond to people. Because at the same time, people were upset as well. They were just upset in general. And the vaccination center and centers, I mean, there were lots of others around the city. This was the first time that people had been in group in a year or so. Very striking for folks. It was really the beginning of the first town square, town hall environment that we did not see for a year, you know, both in New York and around the country. So dealing with that, respecting people's wishes, their privacy, but at the same time communicating to folks and telling them where to go, to come, to register, how to register, was a challenge, but it was also very exciting. One of the ideas we came up with, people who were coming to our building for a vaccine, they wanted to thank the medical teams and the military teams that we had on site to help. but they didn't know where to send a thank you. I mean, we did not help, you know, it was, they couldn't post a review anywhere necessarily. So we ended up creating a giant wall of thanks.
I saw that. I posted thanks on that. That was your idea. I remember that wall with the cards, the colored post-it cards.
The cards. Yeah, we did that. Yeah. And so we started handing out index cards, in essence, and pens. And at the time, it was difficult because, remember, the clean pens and the dirty pens and all of that.
Absolutely.
Stuff. So that was a challenge, too, believe it or not. But, I mean, I was just amazed. We probably collected about 50,000 cards.
Phenomenal.
And, I mean, the messages were just so heartwarming, so appreciative. People drew things. You know, children that came with their parents were writing messages thanking us for giving their parents the shot. And so it was certainly an interesting moment in time in New York City.
That's great. And I know one of the things that I know you and I spoke about, you wanted to, was that intersection of the emergency response in politics and community service and all of that together, which I think this is one of those places where it did all intersect.
Yeah, no, that's a great point to make. I've been doing crisis communications, you know, either reporting about a crisis or handling the crisis on the communication side of things. I've been doing it for 20, 25 years. So, you know, when this came about, I mean, to some degree, I was ready for it to some degree. I mean, I did know the steps to take, even though it was certainly an unusual circumstance. And yes, it was a moment where, you know, emergency response and politics, all kind of converge into one element. The vaccination was open for about 6 months. And during that time, I mean, we had national network circling through the building every other day. We had a line of TV trucks outside of the building every day. And let me, you know, in terms of insight or advice or guidance, to be honest with you.
Please do.
as a PR person, we tend to sometimes think of the media as us versus them. And COVID really showed, really proved to be an example of how you should not do that. We're all in this together. We're all human. We all have the same emotions, the same goals and demands and desires and pressures. During COVID, we regularly brought coffee and snacks to the media stationed outside. It wasn't always a sunny day out. And Javits, depending on where you are, you know, there may not be a coffee stand close by. And so a hot cup of coffee and a donut goes a long way of building relationships, like I said before, but also just to be a nice person. And a lot of the media, I have to say, appreciated that, because at the end of the day, you know, we're all kind of striving for the same goal.
Yeah, and we do need to work together. We need the media and they need us. And I think sometimes, I don't want to say we forget that, but sometimes we don't place enough importance on that and that relationship. That
Absolutely.
We technically, we need them. And I know people today say, well, I'll just put it on social media so I don't need traditional media. I don't believe that for one minute. I think we need traditional media. We need those relationships.
No, 1,000%, because we need each other. Because together, we're in essence, we're vetting the best stories out there. The most credible stories, the real stories, the ones that need to be told and should be told. And so we're, you know, communications professionals play a role in that, because to some degree, it can start with us. And the media is relying on our judgment and our integrity to start that story development process. And then we hand it over to them. And so we are in this together. We do have to work together. And that's where the real stories come out. Yes.
I agree. I think more people need to focus on that. Tony, we're almost out of time. So one last question. What's some good advice you can give people who are interested in kind of doing what you did? You know, what kind of skills do they need, or what should people think about? Either students starting out, or, you know, you and I just did a program for journalists, right? Looking to transition into public relations. We worked together the other night for Public Relations Society of America certificate program for journalists transitioning into public relations. What are some of the things they should think about?
I mean, I think, Sherry, I think the number one thing, I've said this before, young professionals, whether as journalists, maybe, or as public relations professionals, I think you have to be relentless. But I think you have to do it in a very respectful way. I think you have to raise your hand. I think you have to ask questions. I think you have to plow through the noise and, get the story or get what you need to create a great story, because I don't believe anyone really hands you anything. But you can't be, you can't be mean-spirited about it. You have to understand other people's feelings and other people's place in the world and what they may be going through. I think those are great skills to have as a reporter. I developed them as a reporter, and I think they're even more important as a public relations professional. So being respectfully relentless is critical, for sure. There's many, many facets to PR. There's government PR and agency PR, corporate PR, political PR. There's many paths to take depending on your interests. So if I was starting out, I really would I would consider all of those paths and see where do you think you might end up in 5 to 10 years, and maybe that helps you make a decision or two. If you find a mentor in this space, someone that can guide you and give you advice, latch on to him or her. Because their advice and insight will be invaluable. Maybe you don't make a mistake and learn the lesson. Maybe they can, give you advice that helps you avoid that mistake initially. So that's very, very important.
Tony, that's fabulous advice and a great place to end this. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on my show today. So appreciate it and talking to you.
Sherry, thank you so much for all your insight, for all your support, and thank you for the invitation. Look forward to speaking soon.
That's Let's Talk PR and More for today. You can find more information about the show and about me at Goldman Communications Group's website, www.goldmanpr.net. And if you want to hear this show again, you can listen to the podcast, which is posted on Goldman Communications Group's website, as well as on your favorite podcast sites, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, and iHeartRadio. Thank you again for listening. I look forward to talking PR and more with you all again next week.